chickens in the houses, they got chickens in the trees, chicken in the pots, the martyr of the Petaloomies, out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Now Marvin got me started, sold me my first hen. Now I got 4 and 20, and 24 more again. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay? Chicken in the morning, it's chicken in the night. Weren't for chicken, Petaluma never would have reached its height. I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Oh, I'm out in Petaluma, spending my days. Tell me, how many eggs will a chicken lay?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, smart talk about food, wine, and farming here in Sonoma County and beyond. It's nice to be here after a three-week break. I was going to be here last week, and the weather thought otherwise, so I didn't venture out and sat home with candles because one of the many times I lost power during this crazy weather. Hope you're all okay. Hope you got your power back. And hope you managed to get out to a farmer's market. This is a really great time to support our farmers because some of them, especially the ones who attend Sunday markets, they lost three markets because Christmas, New Year's Day, and then really bad storm last Sunday. So they need the money. They need to sell their crops. And we have, I think it's eight farmers markets that operate year-round in Sonoma County. So you're never far away from one, even in this leaner season. We have two themes tonight on Mouthful. We're going to do, instead of doing both throughout the hour, we're going to talk first with Esther Carr, who's here tonight on behalf of Jack and Tony's Restaurant and Whiskey Bar. You also sometimes hear her talking about one of the best food festivals of the year, Glendy, which takes place in September. Maybe we'll get her back then. But now we're going to talk about something that I'm so happy this is happening. The Robert Burns Dinner, taking place on January 29th at Jack and Tony's.
It's actually January 25th.
Because, oh, 25th.
Yes,
okay.
Because that is actually Robert Burns' birthday.
Okay.
And one of the exciting things is that this is happening all around the world. Mm-hmm. On this very day, people in Japan, Scotland, all over Australia, America, granted at different time zones, but it's the same thing all over the world.
Tell us what's going to be happening. First of all, talk a little bit about Robert Burns.
Okay. So Robert Burns is the poet laureate of Scotland, and you probably all remember him as the one who wrote Auld Lang Syne, which we sing every New Year's Eve. Well, that's also how you finish a Robert Burns supper, because there are just certain things that you need to do. And he wrote and wrote so many poems and songs. And so they call him the Scottish Bard, the Bard of Scotland. And not that he's a saint, but he's definitely one of their most famous ones. And so they get together all over to celebrate him and honor him on his birthday. by reciting some of his poetry and singing the songs, and of course, tasting whiskey.
Tasting whiskey, and then there's also something that I'm going to bet a lot of our listeners have never tasted. It's fairly controversial. You can buy it in a can at Costco, and it will be a centerpiece of the meal.
Yes.
And it is?
We will be piping out a haggis. One of the things that you have to do when you have a haggis at a Robert Burns night is you parade it out in front of everyone with bagpipes. It's a big thing, and people bring their hands together so they can waft in the smell of the haggis as you parade it by, and then you have to stick a knife in the haggis.
Do you know the name of the kind of knife? Because I'm forgetting it.
There is, I don't remember.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe my crack engineer here, Anthony, can look up the name of the haggis knife.
But then while we have this knife, and I'm holding this plate of haggis with the knife inside of it, we recite his famous poem, Ode to Haggis.
Yes,
and,
Ode to a Haggis.
And it's a whole ceremony that we have to do. And Jack Mitchell makes a fantastic homemade haggis. This isn't one out of a can. This is his own special kind of take and creation on it. And it's actually really, really good. People are like a little afraid sometimes to try it.
People are terrified of haggis in the United States, and they make jokes about it. And I was lucky in that I was in Scotland. And I was on a press trip, a Scotch press trip, and they, even though it wasn't the right time of year, they recreated a haggis dinner for us, complete with the parade and the bagpipes and the knife. And we were really bad with one thing. We're really bad. There was this American guy who I sort of knew, and when they brought us, they had the one that they paraded.
Right.
At the same time, they were serving each of us our own haggis, and it was beautifully plated, haggis with nips and tatties.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy who called himself a food writer refused to taste it. He refused to taste it, and it's such an insult to the hosts. It's like, you're doing your professional eating, you jerk. And, you know, I'd had some single malt scotch. And so I just took it, and I said, no, eat it. Take a bite. And I got everybody in the entire place, we were all clapping, saying, take a bite, take a bite. And he finally, just to shut us all up, he took a bite.
But, and?
I think he liked it. He'd never admit it. But it was, we should tell people what it is, because it's, when it's made properly, it's really good.
It is really good. There's a lot of different parts to it. And one of them is it has to have oats.
Whole oats as a base, and then there's a lot of innards. There's liver, tongue, lights, which of course are lung. Lots of black pepper,
and Jack tends to use what he can get fresh from the farmers. Actually,
sure.
To use his, so he creates it with his own kind of flair to it,
sure.
Which is really great. But one of the fun things about the whole dinner, this is a 4-course dinner that we're doing. The first course is cockaliki. You can't have Burns Night without cockaliki, which is the Scottish chicken soup.
Yes.
Very peppery.
Yes.
Very peppery. And what we will be doing is pairing a single malt scotch with each course.
Mm-hmm.
So our first course will be cockaliki. Now, we don't know what that pairing is just yet.
Sure. That's okay.
But we will have a with that. And then part of the program, too, is we have Ron Wallace's Scottish Highland Dancers coming.
Oh, that's so great.
And so in between courses and the whiskeys, we will also be having Highland dancing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really terrific.
It's just wonderful. It's wonderful to watch. And bagpipes are another thing that get made fun of. But they're so beautiful. They have that autumn. They're haunting. They have that haunting quality. Let's see. A rustic labour? Highland? We're looking for the name of the knife. I'm not sure. Yeah, not sure. Anyway, and they carry it in, they have a special little pouch for it in their sock, in their high sock that goes with the kilts. So they pull it out and stab the haggis. It's very dramatic. So cockaliki.
Oh, cockaliki. And then we parade out the haggis, mm-hmm. and then we'll have some more dancing, and then we do poetry, do Ode to a Mouse. We have a wonderful teenager, Carmen Anderson, and she has this whole thing memorized.
Oh, wow.
It's really great. Cool. She's also one of the Highland dancers.
Uh-huh.
And then after we do the kakiliki and the haggis, then you have your choice of, once again, peppered, a roast beef or roast beast or salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And then, once again, we're pairing it with a scotch. It could mm-hmm. be a Highland. It could be an Isla, Campbelltown, Speyside. We're not sure just mm-hmm. what yet. And then we have speeches. You can't have a Burns night without speeches. And one of them is the Ode to the Lassies. And it's usually an original speech. And a couple of friends of mine are writers, Lou Bear and his wife Janet. And he is going to be writing the ode, you know, the speech to the lassies, the toast to the lassies. Everyone toasts. But because you have the toast to the lassies, you have to have a response to the toast to the lassies. And so a lass has to get up and give that response as well. And so we do all these toasts, and that happens. And then, of course, more Highland dancing. And then we will do our last course, the dessert course, and that'll be Cranachan.
I don't know if I know it.
Okay. It's whipped cream and raspberries and honey and oats. It's almost like a little version of a Scottish trifle,
okay,
in a way.
Uh-huh.
Individual, served with that, mm-hmm. and we'll pair it with a whiskey. And then we'll have a little bit of more bagpipe music, lots of bagpipe music. And then at the very end, everyone stands, and as a group, we sing Auld Lang Syne.
Oh. And now there's a single seating, and it just takes place through the night.
Yes. So we're asking people to arrive at 6:30 mm-hmm. for a prompt 7 o'clock serving. So we'll sit down and start serving at 7. I do a formal opening, which we need to do for the evening. It's $65 per person, which is an excellent price because you get the four-course dinner, the whiskeys, the entertainment.
Yeah.
And, of course, and then we add on tax and gratuity for just a wonderful evening. Seating is limited.
Sure. How many can you take?
We're probably cannot take more than 50.
Okay.
This year, and it will. You can either contact us by calling 707-526-4347.
Okay, that's 526-4347.
We're also on Open Table.
Okay.
Or you can email our assistant manager, and her name's Marissa@jackandtonys.com.
M-A-R-I-S-S-A.
Yeah. Or you can call me Esther at the restaurant, and I'm happy to tell you all about it.
Okay, well, that
is exciting.
And so, again, it's the 25th. Arrive at 6:30.
Yes. But you have to have a reservation.
Oh, yes, absolutely. You have to have a reservation.
And plaid is encouraged but not required.
Oh, dear. I don't have any plaid right now. Maybe this will
even
inspire
a sash or a
me.
Scarf. And we have plenty of gentlemen that wear their kilts, which is very
that
exciting.
That is great. You know, there's a chef who works, I think he works at Simi, and he always works in a kilt.
Oh.
He works in a heavy, I think it's...
Oh, a utility
brown,
kilt.
Brown leather... And then big, heavy boots. He was at their 140th anniversary party. He was making pizzas in this kilt, and it was just so great to watch.
Well, they're comfortable.
They are. Yeah. Yeah, I know a lot of men who absolutely love them. Okay. Well, Esther, I'm going to thank you so much for last-minute notice. See what you get sending me a press release.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and hope to see you all at the Jack and Tony's.
But you get back to your guests, and we're going to let you go out with a little bit of bagpipe music.
Oh, great. Thank
and
you.
And I will talk to you soon.
Okay. That's good.
It's Mouthful. We're back with some news. The name of the knife used to stab, and that's probably the wrong word, the haggis is skiandu. It's S-K-E-A-N-D-H-U, Scandu. And it's Neeps and Tatties, not Nips and Tatties, Neeps and Tatties. And that, of course, is turnips and potatoes. And really, it's very, very good. If there's any chance that you can go to this dinner, I definitely recommend it. And it's gaining, I don't know if there's been any single thing that happened, but it's been gaining in popularity over the last decade or so. Maybe it's with the increased popularity of single malt scotch. People are becoming more aware, perhaps. Next thing you know, we're all going to be making haggis in January. Excuse me. And now we have... we're going off on our criminal adventure now. Criminal baking company founded by Don Zaff here in the station with a box of goodies, too. Hi, Don.
Hi, Michelle.
I'm not going to make you sing. I think the last time you were in the studio, it was for singing
a
with
jazz
the jazz
trio. Yeah.
Cool. So is that something you still do?
Not since I have a toddler.
Oh, you have a toddler.
I have an 18-month-old, yes.
Oh, you have a mate, boy, girl?
Little boy named Giddy. Gideon.
Yeah. Gideon, oh, nice.
Yeah.
And you have a new... how long has you been in business with criminal baking?
The door has been open for 4 years as of November 17th, and about 9 months before that, I started it illegally in my kitchen,
hence
which is
the
why
name?
We called criminal. Yes.
That's great, and that's great of you to like be so open about that. I love that.
We've redeemed ourselves. I'm no longer a criminal in the eyes of the law, so... It's fine.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
What did you... first of all, where are you located?
We are located at 463 Sebastopol Avenue in Santa Rosa in the SOFA area. It's the arts... The arts. Informal arts district.
Right.
Yes, but it's been a really great location for us.
Yeah, where Spinster Sisters is and a lot of really great art studios.
Yes.
I love Mary Vaughn's work.
Mary Vaughn is a wonderful human as well as a wonderful artist.
She is. Yeah. I adore Mary Vaughn. And I see she's having, she's got a couple things coming up. First Friday in February.
Works.
And I guess that's the Small Work Show.
I'm not sure which
date is which. I think the first Friday is in February is the Small Work Show. And then she's got a show, I think, that will be up from... February through March, but I don't know. A gallery, First Street Gallery, I think it is.
Yeah, and she's situated in the Old Cooks.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Old Cookhouse.
I know. I mean, that whole area is just quirky, and it's full of artists of all different, from all different types of art. I mean, it's just wild.
And it hasn't been ruined yet.
It has not.
Knock on wood.
It has not. No, it's not too, what is the word I'm looking for?
It hasn't really been discovered and turned into a Tony expensive area yet.
No, it hasn't. It's good. And it's mixed business and residential, which also creates a really nice neighborhood feel to it.
Mm-hmm. And just down the block from Juilliard Park.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And there's been a lot of work done in that area to kind of revamp and make it a safer area, hopefully with more continued lighting and different projects to do that.
Mm-hmm, cool. Tell us what you brought.
Okay. So I brought a little array that I thought helped to represent what we're doing these days. One is we're known for these little mini shortbread pies. We hand press all the crusts. And this one is a sweet potato drizzled with sea salted dark chocolate.
Oh, wow.
And then we have a thumbprint cookie with Nutella in it. And it's made from our house-made granola. It's a granola thumbprint. And then we have baked oatmeal, which is formed oatmeal, and it's gluten-free. And we do a lot of gluten-free items for people. We have an array of both regular and gluten-free. And then we're really branching into more savory nosh. So we've just extended
Now you're talking my language.
Yes. We just extended our hours to 4 o'clock on the weekdays. And then we serve brunch on the weekends till 2. So this other item is a stuffed delicata squash, and it's stuffed with wild rice, some cheese, and other minced vegetables that we baked into it. And so we are a bakery in the sense of we use the oven for almost everything except for custards and sauces. But even things like French toast and whatnot, we would use the oven for.
If I'm on track here, you also sell at some farmers markets, is that right?
We're at the West End Farmers Market, which is off right now, but it's definitely a home for us. We've been there for several years
now. I love that market.
It's wonderful. Wonderful people.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have that turned in such a way that I can't see it, and so I can't ask you any questions without. Yeah, I just want to take. I want to take a look here. So everything you say, everything, of course, is hand formed.
Yes, we are very craftsmen, artisanal in that
what
way.
Is it? What is the it's an actual delicata squash.
Yes, we do stuffed vegetables, which mm-hmm. we both put in our case or keep in the fridge, whichever is appropriate.
Uh-huh.
And then we are also doing a number of like savory tarts, and we do an egg white frittata and quiche, and we have most of these things daily mm-hmm. to provide options.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're probably most known right now for both our bacon apple cheddar scone and then our breakfast sandwiches, which we serve on another local bakery's English muffins, Village Bakery.
Oh, Village Bakery English uh-huh. muffins. Tell us about those.
They are, well, we take them, we slice them in half. We slather one side with our lemon curd and the other side with arugula pesto. And it's got a fluffy baked egg with choice of bacon and cheddar. We have one that's called the Alka Pig, and it's a wanted criminal, the Alka Pig. And so it's got ham and caramelized onions and goat cheese with the egg mm-hmm. on there as well.
So that's interesting. So one half of it is sweet and one mm-hmm. half of it is savory.
We do a lot of sweet savory okay. combinations. That's definitely been one of my shticks since uh-huh. the beginning, and I don't know why exactly. Mm-hmm. It wasn't necessarily intellectually planned. It just my palate went that way.
Huh, that's interesting. That's an interesting combination. And how are the eggs done? The eggs
bake them.
Oh, baked eggs. Okay.
Yes. So we use real cream and they're fluffy and kind of like quiche eggs.
Uh huh. Okay. Mm-hmm. Excellent. And what kind of beverages do you serve at the bakery?
Well, we are a cafe as well, okay. so we have a full array of espresso drinks, we make our own syrups, like vanilla syrup.
Okay.
And then we used to do smoothies, but we haven't been able to maintain that because we've gotten a bit busier on the weekends. Uh-huh. So, and I think we went through a number of machines.
Yeah.
So we've been very shabby chic working into our equipment, I guess you could say.
Are you in the location that used to be, well, many things, but was St. Rose?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Mark Malicki's place.
Mark Malicki's place. Mm-hmm. And then it was Seed for a while?
Seed, Bliss Bakery. And then actually the building that we're in was where Tortilla Factory started.
Okay.
Yeah.
Brother Juniper's, I think, was
there. Yeah, it has
there
a great history in that building.
Yeah, I spent quite a bit of time there when it was Brother Juniper's.
Yeah.
And then, I was never there when it was Tortilla Factory.
No, I'm forgetting his name. The very nice man who started Tortilla Factory.
Yes, I can
he
see his face.
He came in and he was telling me about it, actually. I was working the counter that day, just happenstance. And so he was saying, you know, we used to do the corn on one side and the flour on the other. And you know, it's got a great history there.
Yeah, you know, I think it's so important for all of us to, like, remember that. Or mm-hmm. to remember that. I don't have to put the word like in there. I was just having this conversation with another writer, and we were talking about how one of the mistakes that a lot of people make, and this is true not just in Sonoma County, I'm sure, but true anywhere, they feel like the place was invented the day they arrived.
Mm.
And so all of that history, like a restaurant can close forever on a Friday, and somebody new comes to town the next Monday, and it doesn't matter how famous that restaurant was.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't exist to them.
Oh, interesting.
And
so kind of this newness to it.
Yeah, and I had one person who had moved here from New York wag his finger in my face, literally, which is never a good way to make a positive impression on a person.
Seems like a fairly New Yorker behavior.
Yeah, he wagged his finger at me and said, you writers need to know that there's more to Sonoma County than wine. I just discovered some wonderful goat cheese.
Oh, there's also beer.
There's beer. There's all kinds. But I mean, he was so patronizing, and he was chewing out this whole room full of media.
Oh, goodness.
Because he had discovered Redwood Hill goat cheese. So surely none of us had.
Yeah, never mind all the organic, amazing local farms or the longhorn cattle that we have.
Not to mention maybe some people, possibly the one he was wagging his finger at, was writing about Sonoma County farms and food, you know, when he was still in culinary school. So You know, it's just an interesting shift, and I think no matter where you go, it's always good to keep your ear open for history.
Oh, I agree.
You know, find out what something was before it was what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I still feel like such a newbie. Really, opening the business in Santa Rosa was, I'd lived in Sonoma County since 97, but it was really just eye-opening. I didn't really know much about Santa Rosa. Mm-hmm. I found this amazing community of people there. The neighborhoods, whether it was Luther Burbank or the college neighborhood or the West Side, I really found some beautiful people from all of those neighborhoods that have come in and become regulars.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're very lucky in that regard.
Uh-huh. Where had you been before?
I was largely in Cotati.
Oh, so you've...
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've been in Sonoma County. I just, I was in my 20s and, you know, did the party thing by Sonoma State. And then
I
moved to Berkeley for a couple years and came back with more of a resolve to find a place for myself professionally here. And
did you always know that you wanted to be a baker?
No, I actually was in acupuncture school for 4 years. I almost finished my degree and I was working with Kelly Rajula at the, she has the Made Local Marketplace and Share Exchange, and I got this great opportunity to learn about business from that standpoint. I was kind of working on this health cooperative at the time. I was still involved in alternative medicines a lot. I was an herbalist for a long time. And so
You're not old enough to have been anything for a long time, my dear.
About 7 years I had been one, and I was teaching a little bit at the school. And So I was working with Kelly and I discovered all these ways of becoming entrepreneurial that didn't have to be expensive. The softwares that were free, the tools that were available to us, and how to really, I mean, I'm still continuing. Shauna Bull, who does social media, came and did a tutorial for me the other day, and I've been hashtagging the crap out of my pages. So, I learned all these tools to open a business basically there, and I fell in love with entrepreneurship. And then all of a sudden I had no income because I wasn't able to sustain a paying position there, and I had also decided to leave school and
You decided not to pursue acupuncture anymore?
Yeah, I took a long break that I'm still on. So and then I just got involved with I just didn't know what I was gonna do, and so I had worked as a baker when I was young, like 15 and a half, 16, I worked in a bakery and I had loved the work and I was trying to figure out what do I want to do that I love and feel like I can make a way in and also be here in Sonoma County and thrive. And it just came to pass that opening a business and food was going to be the way to go. It didn't feel like that at first. It felt like, oh my gosh, what am I doing? It's such hard work, you know, 60-hour weeks plus.
And
then all of a sudden I'm pregnant, and that wasn't necessarily planned, but a huge blessing in my life. But oh my God, shit hit the fan, and I was just, you know, all of a sudden I had a business and a baby. And I had to really get the business together. And now I feel like we're doing wonderful, and we're really finding our creative pace. We're making really interesting food. It's still handcrafted. It still is. There's time and heart into everything that we do. My pastry chef, Holly Messing, that's been there for several years now, she comes up with these beautiful creations and spreads for weddings that are just very... It's small and thoughtful and warm, and anyway, I'm very proud of the work that we do, and I feel prouder now than I ever have in the business.
That's great. Sitting here with my engineer discussing some appropriate music for when we take a break momentarily, so we will be doing that in just a couple minutes. In fact, are we ready to take a musical break?
I'm just going to confirm
it's not going to do an ad. Explode. Okay, we're going to take a little musical break, and we'll be back with more talk with Don Zaft of Criminal Baking Company.
The Muffin Man is seated at the table in the laboratory of the Utility Muffin Research Kitchen. Reaching for an oversized chrome spoon, he gathers an intimate quantity of dried muffin remnants. And brushing his scapular aside, proceeds to dump these inside of his shirt. He turns to us and speaks. Some people like cupcakes better. I, for one, care less for them. Arrogantly twisting the sterile canvas snoot of a fully charged icing anointment utensil,
he puts forth a quarter ounce green rosette. Let's try that again. He puts forth a quarter ounce green rosette near the summit of a dense but radiant muffin of his own design. Later, he says, some people like cupcakes exclusively, while myself, I say, there is not, nor ought there be, nothing so exalted on the face of God's gray earth as that prince of foods, the muffin.
Girl, you thought it was a man, but it was a muffin. He hung around till you found that he didn't know nothing. Girl, you thought it was a man, but it only was a puffin. No cries was heard in the night as a result of him stuffing.
Trombone, Napoleon Murphy Brock on tenor sax and lead vocals, Jerry Bozio on drums, Tom Fowler on bass, Denny Wally on slide, George Duke on keyboards, Captain Beefheart on vocals and soprano sax and madness. Thank you very much for coming to the concert tonight. Hope you enjoyed it. Good night, Austin, Texas, wherever you are.
When was the last time you listened to some Frank Zappa? So refreshing. It's Mouthful. We are talking about Criminal Baking Company. Do you ever make muffins?
Oh, we make muffins. Yes, we do. I like getting a little fancy with the muffins.
I used to do that too. I used to bake all kinds of muffins, and I haven't done it in years.
Yeah, I mean, we French the muffins sometimes. Sometimes we do. I like putting fruit on the very top of like the blueberry muffins, so, and then folding in the peaches right at the top. So it's almost like a cobbler, mm-hmm. you know. But yes, we make muffins.
Tell me some of the other kinds.
We do pumpkin. It's actually my mom's recipe.
That was my favorite, was pumpkin muffins.
And we top them with pepitas and chocolate chips. Mm-hmm. And then we do a lot of gluten-free muffins. Mm-hmm. That's one of the most popular gluten-free things that people come in the mornings for, besides the scones. So we do lemon poppy seed with almond. We do apple strudel. We've done, let's see, crayon orange, and we top them with
cranberry orange.
We've kind of got this box of condiments for garnishing that we keep around, and we just change it up regularly. Mm-hmm. But I'm a pistachio nut, so I love doing some pistachio toppings on top of things.
Mm-hmm. What is the secret to making baked goods that are gluten-free taste good?
You meet Jen Maley from Liberty 5 Baking Company and have her make your flour blend.
Oh, so she does a special flour blend?
So we are in a shared facility. There's three other companies besides us.
There's a wedding cake.
Fleur de Lisa.
Fleur de Lisa, right.
Lisa is there, and it's just been a great community of people. Mm-hmm. She's lovely. And then, and her cakes are amazing. So then we just had Isabel move in, and she has I'm a Cake Couture, and she is a French trained pastry chef who was a chemist. She's also an incredibly lovely human. So we have
French pastries,
this great little community of people. Mm-hmm. Well, Jen Maley was one of those people for a while, and she has Liberty 5 Baking Company, and you can find her breads at Oliver's Markets, and she is a bread baker of gluten-free variety. But she came up with a flour blend for us that she then basically gifted to us because she moved on out of the space, and we've been using her blend ever since, and it works for everything. It's wonderful. I can't take credit for that at all.
What are some of the things that go into it? Do you know the ingredients?
Yes, it's got some rice flours in it, tapioca, potato, uses the xanthan gum binding agent. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of the balance of those in the mix that she gave us works really well, and we can substitute it. We find that we have to, unfortunately, add things that are more flavoring to it, so the salt, the sugar, because it's like it absorbs the flavors. And we play around with switching the brown sugar into it so it adds a moistening quality. Mm-hmm. But we've been able to do gluten-free scones that we sell to other cafes. We sell up to Black Oak in Ukiah, and it works for almost everything.
Because I'm surrounded by non-gluten eaters.
Yeah, I didn't mean to be a gluten-free baker at all. Bliss Bakery, which was a gluten-free bakery, was in the space before us, and so we automatically had this clientele of gluten-free people. And
now, are they gone?
I'm not opposed to it. It's just
Are they gone, Bliss Bakery?
Yes, I think Bliss Bakery is totally gone.
Okay.
So we just decided to keep working with the gluten-free flours. Mm-hmm. And then we were doing our own blends for a while, and we were having success with them, but we'd have to do different things for different recipes. And then Jen came in, and we got this amazing tool to use as a gluten-free bakery. So, and then some things don't have flour in them at all, like the flourless chocolate tort and all that good
yummy
stuff.
Some of those things, and maybe
they just need chocolate to hold them together.
So. There you go. And then the stuffed delicata squash probably has no flour in it.
Yes, and frittatas and all that good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I've just found one of the bigger challenges is trying to duplicate tastes that are traditionally have a gluten element without gluten.
Well, I do think it adds a blandness to whatever you're making, and you have to adjust your flavoring components, whatever they may be, whether it's an alternative sugar or regular sugar or whatever your salt or spices, you have to kind of bump them up to get something that tastes how your palate wants it to taste.
Yeah, and then the absorption too. I know I was at a friend's house and for Thanksgiving, and everyone always tries to make me make the gravy. And this was like 4 years ago, and I didn't know that I was going to be doing that, or I would have done a little research. But making a gravy that both tastes good and doesn't separate is challenging.
I could see how that would be the case. Because I think they must be even heavier molecules or something.
And there's probably, I'll research this at some point, there are probably better things on the market now. even for, it has changed so much in the last 3 to 4 years.
Yes, well, anybody market. Anybody who talks to me about gluten-free baking and is talking about just using coconut flour or something, I kind of encourage them to try blending on their own.
Or, yeah.
And on to stay away from garbanzo bean flour, just because the aroma alone will kill you. Unless you're making something that's meant for garbanzo.
Exactly. There are things flour. That are meant for that.
Yes. And culturally, that's delicious. For whatever reason, mm-hmm. it works there. But I didn't like it in the gluten-free flour blends for desserts at all.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's, you know, rice flour. Rice flour and rice noodles are great, but they taste like where they are from, you know. Mm-hmm. If you have rice noodles, they don't taste exactly like Italian pasta.
Yes.
Which people tell me they do, but they don't. And if you have, say, a marinara sauce mm-hmm. over your bowl of rice noodles, you got a cultural clash going on in your mouth. So
Or fusion cuisine, maybe.
Yeah. That's not a total pet peeve of mine.
I don't know. I'm a fan for just using spaghetti squash as my alternative.
Me
pasta.
Too. I think spaghetti squash is brilliant. And the thing I found about that is you can use it with Italian dishes, but you can also use it with some Southeast Asian dishes, and it actually works well.
I don't tend to cook a lot of Southeast Asian mm-hmm. dishes at home just because I haven't ventured over to mm-hmm. that side of the cuisine yet, but yeah. I've used it for so many different pasta dishes as well mm-hmm. as baked pasta dishes, which is my favorite with the spaghetti squash.
Yeah. The spaghetti squash is fabulous, yes. And it's so fun.
Yeah.
You know, I always feel like a little kid, you know, after you cook it, and it's like, it really is shredding itself.
Yeah,
and
I think
it's just fun.
I think the idea of using vegetables in different ways like that is actually really fun. And that's
zucchini
one of the things that
one.
Brought on the stuffing of the vegetables, which, mm-hmm. you know, and yeah, slicing the zucchini.
If you do it on a mandolin, you can make noodles and you can make zucchini
or
carbonara.
Roses inside a quiche and things like that. Yeah. So we've been playing around more with that. And we're in the arts district, so I feel this, you know, I've got this pressure
you can do
to
whatever
be
you want.
The artistic, yes, and this freedom to be whimsical as I want, on some level.
Now, one of the thing that got you here tonight was some comments on Facebook that you want to start doing more writing, social media, blogging, that sort of thing.
Yes.
You want to talk a little bit about what you want to do?
Well, I mean, my goal is to start creating a blog, and I'm going to do my best to set a weekly thing, but I have two blog entries on my website right now, and I'm pleased with them. Mm-hmm. It felt good to write about food and the personal connection to food, mm-hmm. the evolving of my character and building up of different experiences I've had that have helped me to now be a better businesswoman as mm-hmm. well as a mother. You know, and a friend, you know, the parts of myself that I'm missing more of, friendship and whatnot that I don't have the time for. I want to write about that. All those, uh-huh. not, you know, the woes and the successes and the happinesses. You know, I met a really wonderful man while in this business because of being in the space I'm in. So there's been all kinds of life that's happened, and that ties into food and working with food and my bravery around working with food.
What do you mean by tell me about?
I'm a worrisome person. I second guess myself a lot. So a lot of having a business has been about becoming braver. Mm. And the life experiences that it's unfolded and the people I've met, I've had some really hard interactions with people, as well as some really beautiful interactions mm-hmm. with people. I've met some of the nicest people. I mean, people have come in with gifts for the business because they knew we needed it to survive and we didn't have the money. Like, we've just had really amazing experiences there. Uh-huh. And all of those interactions culminate to make me look at myself in the eye, I guess, to have little discussions with myself on the level of, okay, well, now you need to really look at this and get your act together, or you're not going to be able to either move into the next level of a business or even survive as a business. This is what I felt during my postpartum period, honestly. Like, it was one of the hardest periods of my life. I felt like I didn't have the core muscles anymore, which literally cut during a cesarean. Like, I felt like I didn't have those to stand up and be a good employer and a good, you know, and I had to get that back and heal that. And so there's a lot of experiences that have come in from owning a business.
What sort of recovery time I mean, no, it takes much longer to recover from a cesarean section.
I think I'm still evolving. Okay. The recovery, I'd say a good year.
Okay.
I mean, I felt like a basket case a number of times, a lot of panic and anxiety, mm-hmm. and then having a business that's still in the beginning phase
sure.
of its life.
So you had two infants.
I did, you know, and so to survive, to find my footing and just start going moment to moment and day to day and believing that we were going to make it and really looking around me and being like, you know, I have a lot more support than I'm acknowledging. I'm really looking at the fear and not at what's around me supporting me, and maybe I need to start being more grateful and start that evolution of perception mm-hmm. and the way we frame things.
Mm-hmm. That's so important.
It is so important. And I think that's one of the gifts that being a mom has given to me is I've got a much more grateful lens, but it took me a while to start using that, I think, during mm-hmm. the postpartum period. I think mm-hmm. I was so immersed in fear of being a new mom, of being a business owner, of the merging of the two, of cash flow and all these business things that you have to worry about, that bureaucracy and taxes and, you know, what you need to do to survive as a small business.
All that stuff is just so overwhelming. It's so overwhelming.
It's insane.
And I really think that it's very taxing on a woman. And I thought your use of the term core muscles mm-hmm. being torn, being cut mm-hmm. during the C-section. I think it's so much harder to recover from a C-section, not just physically, but psychologically. Because there's something about, I've had two kids mm-hmm. naturally.
Okay.
And there's something that on one hand is so incredibly brutal about labor mm-hmm. and birthing. And then, you know, if we were capable of remembering the full spectrum and arc of the pain involved, there would be no humans, because no one would ever choose to do it again.
Oh, yeah.
But it's so interesting the way it actually, you lose your memory of it.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot remember how bad it is.
Mm-mm.
And you also, there's also this sort of deep self-knowledge that you came through it.
Mm-hmm.
And you came through it, you know, maybe with the help, I mean, certainly with doctors and things around you, but you came through it.
Yeah, I mean, even though I had a cesarean, I look at my birthing experience as really positive.
Oh, that's great.
I was going out of the Sebastopol Community Health Clinic,
uh-huh.
and I just had these wonderful women doctors surrounding me.
That is so great.
Connie Earl was my main doctor, and then Brooke Vizzino invited me to her house to give me acupuncture. I mean, it was just, there was so much love
uh-huh.
there. And so, and then this amazing cesarean doctor shows up at the foot of my bed and like really puts the choice in my lap. It was really done well. They were interactive. You know, I was like, pump me with that pain medicine at this point. I don't want to feel you cutting.
Yeah.
They were just, there was always a sense of like, there was a sense of humor in the room.
That's great.
Yeah. It was really,
it's
beautiful.
Changed a lot since I had my kids.
Yeah.
I'm pretty old school. It was, I had like a vicious, mean nurse. I was I was by myself in a dark room through 90% of my labor, with a nurse coming in every now and then and yelling at me.
Yeah.
And that's,
I mean,
how
so
it
many
used
women
to be.
Have had horrible yeah. experiences like that, you know.
Yeah.
I
and
I
that's
feel
something
really
that's
blessed.
Changed. But that is, to a large degree, that has changed with a generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's much better now.
Yeah. So I feel like my son also, he had to have a surgery when he was 1 month old. We had to have an emergency trip down to UCSF, and he had, they had to take his stomach out and just do a little repair where they just put a hole in the lower sphincter uh-huh. of his stomach because it had closed. And so there was just all of this tumultuous experience.
Sure.
And I just, there was always a sense of like panic and survival and also panic and survival with the business. And I think I just became in this cloud of it for a minute, and it took a while
business
for that to dissipate.
Did you keep the business open during all this?
Yes. And
that's
amazing. Yeah. And actually, Holly, who I mentioned before, uh-huh. my pastry chef, she was wonderful during that time. And I'm sure that I was a bear to deal with at different points, just, or not a bear, but just like really kind of a space case and not wanting to deal with any of the conflict or
sure.
the business or the dealing, and wanting to just be in this bubble of maternity leave. But when you're a business owner, let alone a single mom, you
yeah.
know, you don't get the bubble of, I mean, I'm all for long maternity leaves. So you don't get that necessarily. I was there the same week writing paychecks for, you know, that's
there's
just
no such thing as leave when you own your business.
No, there's not.
Even if you go miles away, still connected.
But ironically, now I think about like going on vacation, there's almost like the sense of like terror of, oh God, I have to be away from the business, you know, so there's that with it as well. But that you're just, you know, there was a long recovery time. I do think it took a year for me to physically feel the hormones to calm down, for my body to start feeling, you know, back to normal. And I still think that the evolution of perspective continues because, you know, I'm a mom, so.
Yeah.
And a business.
What's next for your business?
Well, we just extended hours, and we are, let's see, I'm wanting to eventually indulge some classes and possibly some special dinners.
What
and
sort
things
of classes?
Like that. Well, we've done scone making for serious sconers.
Okay.
So that was one of the most popular, but I'm possibly wanting to bring in some other teachers. So I have to kind of sit down and draw up the plan right now for what that's going to look like. And we're bringing in the lunchtime nosh, more savory baked goods into the case, and doing some more lunch specials. And so that actually takes quite a bit of planning, especially when we're trying to stay and keep our overall feel. So I think that's mainly where we're at right now. It's just kind of fleshing out the business plan from what I would love to do is eventually have classes Sunday through Wednesday on and off, and then dinner Thursday through Saturday. Oh. But we're a little ways away from that.
Back to what we talked about when we first started, Criminal Baking Company.
Yes.
You've been very vocal. I mean, you've just come right out and said, I did it illegally in my house for 9 months. Did anyone from the health department, anybody official, like, poke you over that?
No, luckily, no. I was so, it was very tongue-in-cheek, and largely I was keeping my sense of humor because I was nervous about the whole thing. But I was in a place where I had there was no loan, there was no access to money that level of,
hey,
like,
lots of us have done it.
I did have a local business come in and eventually give me a little bit of money once we had the cafe to try and to lend me a little bit to get started there. But I, you know, it's what we have to do to survive.
Sure. I mean,
on some level.
You know, I started my catering business when I had a cat. I haven't done it for a long time, but I ran my catering business the same way. And it's like, what else are you going to do? You know, not make an income, not take advantage of the opportunities you have because you can't get a huge loan. Mm-mm. Or you can't maintain a huge overhead?
No. I mean, we've really been from the ground up, very literally just like one step at a time. We're still, I mean, we have to get knives. So that's my next thing on our like to get list. We need not crappy knives. Mm-hmm. So we're almost there.
There you
go. We're
going to
get the display fridge. Yeah.
Okay. And now let's give people all the details that they need.
Okay.
So Criminal Baking Company, center of the block practically on Sebastopol
Avenue.
I call
it the city middle.
Okay.
Yes.
And still pretty decent parking around there, too, isn't
it? It's street parking, but I think people generally find a space pretty well.
Yeah, I always do when I come down there. Yeah. I always find a space. And your hours are?
So on the weekends, we are open for brunch from 8 a.m. until 2 p.m. And then on the weekdays, we open at 7:30 a.m. And then we're open until 4 p.m. The kitchen for breakfast closes at 2, but we still have lots in the case, and the cafe's open, and we are some other lunch specials that are pre-made, too.
Okay, and is that 7 days a week?
Yeah.
You don't take a day off? Oh,
I do. Okay. I'm pretty lucky right now. I get Fridays and Saturdays off. It's
good. Excellent. Okay, how many staff?
Let's see. off the cuff, I think I have about 8 people.
Oh,
there
okay.
Right now. Yeah.
Big operation.
Yeah. So some of them, it's great. Some of them are very, very like part-time, just come in and help us make one or two things. And then some are more there, residents.
And then the website is
criminalbaking.com.
Okay, criminalbaking.com. Phone number?
707-888-3546.
888-3546. And on that note, thank you so much for coming. Thanks for bringing these fragrant goodies. And y'all meet me back here next Sunday for another yummy episode of Mouthful Smart Talk about food, wine, and farming in Sonoma County and beyond. Have a great week. Stay warm and dry.